Last time Jonas Kaufman was here was opening night for Andras Nelson's gala concert as our new music director, September 27, 2014. Christina Obelas was with you. You opened with Infernumland from Lohengrin. Then you did the Turiddu's great aria.
Yeah.
And then you did the duet, the love duet from Manolo Sko. And you ended with an encore, Suave Fanciulla. It was a great opening night. We all remember that.
Yeah, well, it was great fun. It's a fantastic hall. I mean, that was my first appearance here, and I couldn't believe that I hadn't been here before, because I like the city, I have to say. I have friends who grew up here, other friends who studied here for years, and everyone is praising, and I understand why. I mean, now, obviously, we are not in the perfect prime time, weather-wise, but nevertheless...
We will be.
I don't know. I mean, but it's more shopping than walking. And, I mean, this hall, it makes it much easier to sing in, I have to say. It's really remarkable how beautiful one can sing in there, and soft, sing soft also. Everything is audible. That is really amazing, because... even in pieces like Tristan, even though you wouldn't expect it, there's a lot of soft stuff in it. And if you can, you really should do it, because it makes a big difference. Also, not only musically, but also for that character. Because, of course, he's a warrior, and you have to have this harsh and dark sound sometimes, and the explosions. But I mean, he's a lover as well. I mean, and what a lover, obviously, because with that love potion, it's craziness.
It is craziness, and it gets even crazier in the third act.
Yeah, exactly. That is completely cuckoo. But it's interesting. Also, third act is psychologically extremely interesting, how Wagner... describes him, his situation there. It's like a drug addict. I mean, it's
yeah. He was a sorcerer. Wagner.
Yeah,
he seduced people with his music.
Yeah, absolutely, you know? Absolutely. It's complete seduction. Maybe not in the. You see, I mean, you have the typical drugs that you say you try him once and you're an addict for the rest of your life. This is not the case with Wagner. I think you really need to want that. You need to listen to it several times, and after a while suddenly it kicks in, and then you can't get off it anymore. I think it's that is really something special with Wagner. It's a potion that doesn't work immediately, but when it works, it's for the rest of your life.
Yeah,
probably.
It kicks in.
Yeah.
I'm looking at a opera news of 11 years, 2011,
okay.
This is. Okay? Here's the headline. Relaxed power, Jonas Kaufman excels in French roles, in Italian roles, in German roles. At the moment, is there anyone who delivers the way he does? It reminds me of a line about Richard Strauss when he was in Berlin years ago, and he got into a cab. And the cab driver says, Maestro, Richard Strauss, where can I take you? And he said, anywhere, I'm in demand all over. Does it feel like that to you sometime with the requests you get from people and your audience and your fans?
Well, somehow yes, it is. But I mean, it's up to you. I mean, first of all, I think I'm a different character. I would never come up with such a line. But the truth is, I could easily sing every night in two or three different places. And you have to be very prudent and careful to choose what you want to take on, how much you want to take on, when to take it on. If we talk about this Tristan, it's been a long time in the pipe, and I want to sing it, of course, on stage one day, and I will do it in probably 3 years' time. And it was a great opportunity when we had this concert you mentioned in 2014. We were immediately starting talking about the possibility of doing this concert version of Second Act, which is a good opportunity to start, because then you got that out of the way somehow. Act one is not really, really much, and you can fully concentrate on Act three, because that takes a while. It is this kind of music, to me, maybe different to almost anything else. I mean, of course, there are tricky parts like Otello and the mentioned Manon Lescaut, the Puccini, which are very demanding and very difficult equally. But in this case, I think it's probably the first time I learned a part where you have the impression there are endless corners where you can break your neck. Because if you don't know exactly where to go next, mm-hmm. if you are hesitating just a little bit, which makes your support for the voice become weak, it's the end. I mean, there are a lot of places where it's just one note that you hit wrong, that you don't support well, that you sing not as healthy as you can, and you can go home. That's the end of the evening.
You're like a vocal athlete in a way, running a marathon.
It is somehow. Right? I mean, this is it's only a half marathon because we're doing only one act. But still, I mean, I was a couple of days ago still in Europe, and I got a call from Salzburg Festival. They were in need because they did a Tosca production at the Easter Festival, and the tenor colleague was called in sick, and they said, "Can't you just come?" And I said, "No, I'm on my way to Boston, and I will have rehearsals." That day, and if I do that performance, which is Easter Monday, I can arrive Tuesday, I can rehearse Wednesday. This is only one day with orchestra. I can't do that. This is too risky. It's way too difficult. And then they laughed and they said, "Well, I mean, you said it's only second act, but by the time you've finished act two in Tristan, you probably sung Cavaradossi twice already, because it's so much music, it's never ending. It goes on and on and on and on all the time." And it is, of course, excitement. It's he created an atmosphere of excitement that is so over the top to understand how lost they are in this love, in that situation, that they would take any risk just to be together. But it makes it very hard, and there's no big, of course, I mean, if you have then later in the act, you have moments where you can breathe and where you can relax before you come back in. But it feels really like it's not a marathon. It's maybe a constant jump. So you constantly have to, and you have no time to prepare and accelerate for the next jump. You just have to do it standing. It's just, that's maybe the feeling that you think, and another one, and another one. I haven't even taken a breath. I realized, oh, maybe that was not completely together with the orchestra. No time, go on. So it's a situation close to panic, but of course it should never be that, especially once you mastered it and you're performing it in front of the audience. But the beginning, that's exactly the feeling. So it is, to me, very unique. And I shared that that thought also with our soprano, the wonderful Camilla Nylund, who I've done a lot of things with her in the past. And she said exactly the same thing. She said, there's a Swedish saying that you should always have the tongue in the right place in the mouth. And it's... well, meaning you can easily screw up, and that's exactly what we're having here. But at the same time, it is so much fun. I mean, I can't tell you how much excitement.
Really, you're having a good time. I could feel that in rehearsal.
Incredible.
Yeah.
And this music just carries you on and on and on and on and on. It's wonderful, and I hope this will come across to the audience and make them also be in this thrill and excite.
We could talk about Tristan all afternoon. You know.
Yeah, I know.
But there are so many. There are so many other aspects of your career. You born in Munich, but you never wanted to be pigeonholed as a German tenor. You sing the great roles by Verdi, the Manrico, La Forza del Destino. You've done an Otello with Antonio Pappano, one of your favorite conductors. What is the difference between, you know, what you said about Tristan and these great powerhouse roles that Verdi wrote, and in the legacy of great tenors who've sung them from Caruso to Pavarotti to Delmonico to Corelli,
yeah.
And now you're doing them?
Well, of course, also that is very exciting and demanding as well. But if you talk about Verdi, for instance, the big difference between Verdi, everybody knows that probably, between Verdi and the Verismo, which is more challenging maybe than Verdi in a way, is that with Verdi he would never double the voice. So it means it makes it easier, not only because you're not so much in the need of powering to be heard and not be covered by the orchestra, but at the same time you have more flexibility. There is more free. There is less stress, as I described it now, that you're constantly rushing to catch the train, and it gets faster and faster all the time, and you can never reach it. You're just running and running and running and being run by the orchestra, maybe. This sensation doesn't exist to me, at least it doesn't exist with Verdi, because there's always this flexibility, and it has to be, because you are the one who has the melody, you are the one who has to shape the music. And even though something like Otello or Alvaro and Forza del Destino that you mentioned, it's a hell of a part. It is really, really difficult. These duets never end, and it's another one and another one, another one. But it is somehow different because you can do it in your pace, and all that, the traditional outbreaks and all that, everything is possible. Here, you are more glued to the text, and there's not much possibility for you to just say, wait a minute, I'm going to do a fermata here, and then we continue. That doesn't exist. I mean, almost doesn't exist. And it's a bit similar with Puccini, but in Puccini, it's a constant back and forth. But here, it's very difficult for the conductor to bring the orchestra down. No, I mean, I enjoy both. I enjoy it all. I enjoy the French music as well, and I enjoy the lead singing, because then it's complete freedom in lead singing, because you only have a pianist that accompanies you. You have your interpretation. You can do the softest things that are inaudible in front of an orchestra. But of course, all these experiences, all these moments that you witnessed, help you? Of course, they give you confidence if it's a positive experience. And at the same time, it makes your colors gives you more variety all the time. So, and you, it's so wonderful that you have the impression, even though it's an opera that has been performed already for the last 1.5 centuries, you can still add something personal, something special to it, and it's as if you recreate it. That's wonderful, and that's probably the basic success and secret of opera, that it is old stuff, but it's brand new over and over again.
Exactly. I was listening to La Forza del Destino the other day, and you talk about that last act where Verdi and that thunders out, and you must want to, as when you sing that. I was going to wonder what the difference is singing it in front of an Italian audience. When you sing La Forza, it is so Italian, you know, and with so much of Verdi, it resounds in the heart like that. You just say, "Oh, I'm going to give." Do you say, "I'm going to really go over the top here"?
Yeah,
you feel it in your
absolutely.
Voice. Absolutely. You don't feel like holding back.
No, no. There is no holding back. At the very end, I mean, of. It's pure joy. I mean, to be able to be part of that, to be in the middle of the sound, to be surrounded by the others, to feel that special spirit and excitement of Verdi that still kicks in.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really amazing that people just, which have never seen La Traviata,
go crying
at the end,
right?
Because it's so moving.
But to know that you are having this effect on the audience and giving them goosebumps as you sing must be very fulfilling to you, to know that you're having this effect on the audience, that they are as emotionally involved with it as you are. I always felt that we in the audience are living vicariously through you on stage.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, but of course it is fulfilling. The problem is only you should never think about it while you do it, because the chances are that you start doing effects on purpose because you think then you can hit them even more. It has to come from you. It has to come from inside. I have to feel it. I have to suffer with that character. I have to fool myself that I'm actually in this situation, that it's my heart that breaks at that moment. And then it comes across easily. There's no technique, no effect, no artificial stuff that I add. It just comes naturally. And to be able to do that, obviously, you need to free your mind. You need to be able to not being blocked by, for instance, by technique. So I can't constantly think of, okay, I have to breathe here, larynx low, diaphragma, and the back or whatever, or the larynx, the throat, whatever, the high note, be careful here, not too much. That would be in the way. That would hinder me to be just completely melted into this situation and into this character. And it took, of course, years and years of training until I mastered it in a way that I just don't think much about singing. Of course, when I practice, when I learn a new part, when I take on a part, as I told you before, you need to be aware which corner has to be sung in which way, where to cover more and where to maybe go straight into the head voice and so on. But all these technical details are soon gone and are automized, and then you can start interpreting, and that's why I'm singing.
Yeah.
Because and it was a big problem at the beginning of my career. Not only before when I studied, I killed my voice over and over again because I didn't pay attention at all to technique. I was just trying to interpret, and that was just not possible because the voice was not ready. The technique was not there.
And you were pushing. You were pushing.
I was pushing too much.
You were pushing, but then you learned a whole other technique when you had that crisis.
Yeah.
And you described it. Part of it was using your mouth like you're yawning. And Corelli, when I saw him sing, had that big yawn. It just came out and just enveloped it that you have.
Yeah, well, it's very difficult to describe. Unfortunately, we have to always speak in images because not like a violinist master who shows exactly what he does with his fingers, what he does with the bow, how to hold the instrument. We can't look inside. We just have to describe our feelings. And, of course, yawning, and they say leaning against the sound and all that. I mean, it sounds Chinese at the beginning because, obviously, you don't know what to do with it because we describe a combination of muscle movement, let's to make it very easy, that we haven't trained to be working together, and this chain, this combination of movements of muscles has to be wrapped together to an automatism that's called singing, and then you just open your mouth and breathe and off you go. And that takes time, and there are people they never reach it. There are people they just have it. They just open their mouth and they naturally know what to do. It. Well, actually, they don't know. They just do it, and the minute they start thinking about it, they get into trouble. It all happened. I mean, so it's quite a weird profession that we're having there. But once you've mastered it, it's the best in the world, I think.
I remember once Frank Sinatra was going through a vocal crisis years ago, and he called up Pavarotti, and he said, "I'm having trouble doing a piano." And Pavarotti just said, "Frank, it's very easy, just to close your mouth." And he loved to tell that story. But American bel canto singing, you know, you talk about that's verismo, American leader. What Tony Bennett and Frank Sinatra, they all have a legato sound.
Their
phrasing and everything is very verismo, as you describe when you sing Puccini.
Absolutely. You know? I mean, whether it's Bing Crosby, Dean Martin, or whatever you mentioned, they had exactly that. I mean, it's this endless flow, almost always, I have to say, it should be. It should be soft and sweet, and it's never so harsh, so tight, so strong that you cannot go back. Mm-hmm. And that was also one of the secrets that I had to learn, how to do a crescendo and a decrescendo, to go from soft to a strong voice is much easier, but then to go back from strong to soft, that is difficult, because if you don't do it right, it's a one-way street. You can never go back. You have to breathe and sing, but you can't. And you see in these those singers that we mentioned, they are able to do that. I mean, it's like licorice, you know. It's like something like honey. It just goes here and there and all the time, and it suddenly it's all together, and then it spreads again, and it's wonderful, and it's so much fun. And in fact, I'm maybe one day I want to sing some of those songs of the American Songbook.
I think it'll be great.
It's such wonderful music, and you just need to keep the beauty in yeah. your instrument, and don't kill it too early.
I want to talk a bit. I know you thank you for doing this extended interview, because you know.
Oh sure, we wanted great pleasure.
I know how busy you are. As I said, the Richard Strauss story at the beginning to take me anywhere. You were born in Munich. Now, as a youngster growing up, what was around you? What were you listening to? Did you know you had this gift right away?
No, I mean, I was always singing. I had, my family, first of all, none of them were musicians, but they loved classical music, and it was playing on and on. It was on the radio or on LPs or big tapes that they, because then that was the first step to listen to a symphony entirely without turning
reel
to
reel tape. Yeah. Yep.
And many subscriptions to all kinds of cultural activity in Munich, and they took us to a lot of those events. And when I was 5 years old, I wanted to play the piano because my sister played the piano, and I was jealous, and I was not allowed to touch it because I wasn't trained. And so we went to the teacher, and he said, "You're too young. Your fingers are too small. You cannot reach them. It's impossible." So as kind of a substitute, I joined a boys' choir. And that was fantastic. That was the best thing. Because from that moment on, I never stopped singing. I mean, that was so wonderful to be in the middle of the sound. It gave me goosebumps right away. And that was, the beginning. That doesn't mean that I mean, if my mom tells me or told me that... I was telling people, I want to become an opera singer. I have no memory of that. That must have been very, very early. But then one day I had to face whether it's math or music. And after a couple of years math, I realized it's going to be music because that the other one is too dry. And I just did go for it. And my father was strictly against it, to be very
frank. Really?
Because... not because he didn't believe in me, but because he knew about the risks.
Yeah.
And of course, chances are that you spend years and years of training and with no result. So you have to find another job. And he just tried to protect me from that disappointment. But if you really have to do it, you have to do it. Because otherwise, you will always... blame the others that they've taught you out of it, and you would have had a career. So I did try it, and it worked well, but I know exactly how minimal chances are that you make a proper career, and not talking about an international whatever star doom career. It's just not happening usually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But nevertheless, I mean, if it's a passion, you have to do it. And of course, what better can happen that you have a profession that is actually your passion as well.
And you had
and
a
others
tough time
pay you to do something that you like
you
the
love.
Most.
It's like being in radio, what we do, you know, love what we do.
Yeah.
There was a tough time in Munich for you because breaking through to the Munich Opera, you were singing there.
Yeah.
And then finally somebody came along who said, "What do you want? I'm going to give you a contract, right?"
Exactly. No, exactly. The new administration, the new general manager, he asked me specifically and said, "Why aren't you singing here?" I mean, I wonder. I was reading the cost list of the last couple of years, but you were born in Munich. I mean, why is that so? I said, "Well, I mean, nobody loves me. I sang in from the moment I finished music school in Munich to my first performance under the new management in Munich, I sang in these 15 years, 3 shows.
Wow.
So that's not really a lot.
No.
And then suddenly, from nil to 100, I was, it was incredible. It just, I mean, they offered me whatever I wanted. And of course, I mean, then you have to be careful because you can't sing all and you can't spend the rest of your career there, which would be maybe interesting because that means you finally can see your friends more often, can see your family and everything. But that would have been the end of the international career. So I kept Munich always as my home harbor and was on tour like always.
Mm-hmm. And the rest, as they say, is history. What a remarkable career you've had since then. But what you just said about Munich reminds me of a story about a great American tenor. You may recall James McCracken.
Oh, yeah.
Who sang all of these minor roles at the Met for years, you know, Pages, and would have two or three lines in Trovatore before Manrico's big aria. He went over to Europe and came back as a leading Othello.
Yeah, you see.
It just took him that long to break through those barriers, you know.
Yeah, exactly. The prophet in their own country, this is the problem. If they know you inside out, or they think they know you, they don't see your progress. They don't see your potential. They had put you in a box, and this is what actually made me think and made me change a lot in my decisions in my career, that I will never ever want to be in that box again. I always wanted to be not the German tenor, not the Italian tenor, not the French tenor, but just me, Kaufmann. Mm-hmm. So and it worked. I mean, it took a while for some to understand it, to accept, and also all the advisors told me, no, that's not the way to make a career. You have to specialize in something. And then if everybody knows you, then maybe you can crawl back out of that corner and do something else. No, that's not how I wanted. Because then they say, well, why is the Italian tenor suddenly singing German repertoire? That doesn't make sense. I never wanted that to happen. So, and it worked out. That doesn't mean that that's the general recipe for every career, but for me, it was a good decision.
There are many things you still want to do. I know perhaps a Siegfried is there somewhere.
Yeah, you see, I believe in the beauty of Siegfried. Let's put it short. You see, second actor, the Waldweb and all that, and the third act, the duet, is actually beautiful. But of course, most of the times, it is a very demanding part. No question. I mean, of course, I'm not saying, oh, wow, it's so easy. Not at all. Otherwise, I would have done it already. But I think Wagner deserves to be sung beautiful. And every part in it. Because it was a musician. And a musician always loves melodies. And there are beautiful melodies in it. But unfortunately, sometimes you only hear the text spitted out, and it's, there is no continuity, no flow, as we said before, which I think is actually something that helps also the audience to enjoy music more than if they would just hear people barking and struggling maybe. Right. Nothing against all my great colleagues, and I admire them for singing these parts for decades sometimes. I can only say I want to do it, and we can talk again once I did it. But that is still future, and I think the next part, if you talk about Wagner, should be Tannhäuser. And then maybe one day the Siegfried too.
Wonderful, that's great. And you know, bringing mind what Frank Sinatra's big hit, you did it, really did it your way.
Yeah.
I mean, you told him, you said, I'm not going to be boxed into this narrow thing. I'm going to do it all. And you've pretty much done it all in the repertoire.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
I'm getting there.
Well, good luck and thank you for joining us, Jonas. It's
thank
been a great
you very
conversation.
Much for having me here. Yeah.
Continued success wherever
great
you
pleasure.
Are. Thank you.